Welcome back to the Grizzle One-on-One Management Podcast Series, an opportunity for us to talk to the leaders of innovative industries building the foundation of tomorrow's economy. We pan away from the daily noise of the market to get a deep understanding of the real drivers of change. In our second episode of the series, we are thrilled to have James Lanthier, CEO of Mindset Pharma, join us. Mindset is one of the world's leading companies in the field of psychedelic medicines to treat neurological and psychiatric disorders. James brings a wealth of insight to the pod and breaks down the big picture of the true disruption that's happening in the field. Please enjoy the interview. James, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Thomas, I am great. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it and always enjoy chatting with you guys.
Yeah, thank you. And, I wanted to take it from a very high level with respect to the psychedelics industry as a whole. Could you... James, we've always had great discussions around understanding what the opportunity set is and what psychedelics are. Maybe for those who don't know, and you can provide a primer, what's the opportunity set we're looking at here and how disruptive are psychedelics?
Yeah, absolutely. At a very high level, I'd say it's a very large opportunity and disruptive in, I think, a way that, not everyone, fully appreciates. So I think it's important to understand that psychedelics will really serve, a very different market, than say, the cannabis market. The direction that psychedelic drugs are really headed in today is a medical direction. And this is actually not a new use of psychedelic drugs. Actually, this is really kind of a back to the future. This is how psychedelic drugs, and by psychedelic drugs, I'm talking about a number of different drugs, including drugs like LSD and psilocybin, which is the psychoactive component of magic mushrooms. This is how these drugs were originally used when they were first synthesized and discovered in the West earlier in the 20th century. So, LSD was used to treat alcoholism. Psilocybin was used in psychotherapy. Unfortunately, really for everybody, these drugs were scheduled by sort of most of the governments in the West with the backlash against the 1960s counterculture, and were really kind of put off limits for study, and pharma companies really had kind of no incentive to pursue them because these drugs were sort of sitting at the opposite end of the political spectrum and public opinion. And it's really thanks to the work of a number of kind of not-for-profit groups that, had been doing a lot of, foundational scientific work to go back and really prove that the drugs have, a therapeutic benefit that, we are, where we are today. So what's really exciting to everybody, and the reason why there's such a buzz around the drugs, is that there have been, over the last few years, there's an increasing amount of really decisive clinical data that shows that these drugs do a really good job of treating some really hard to treat, mental health indications. So for instance, depression, where, roughly a third of people who suffer from depression don't respond to, SSRIs or any of the, sort of established drugs, those people respond in much greater numbers to the use of psychedelic drugs. So this is really where the market is headed. We all know there's, almost to the point of it being a cliche, but sadly, it's very true. There is a mental health crisis. There, the number of people who suffer from these indications grows, year over year. And the opportunity with psychedelic drugs is really enormous. And it is truly disruptive because they do seem to be able to, offer a potential lifeline to people who, are not being helped today by modern psychiatry, and that number is definitely growing kind of year over year. So that's really the opportunity with psychedelic drugs at a high level.
That's fantastic. It's a great overview of where we are today. And with respect to the general population and the acceptance, this acceptance of going from the taboo to this, you know, to something that, that can be accepted. How it feels like things have just incredibly accelerated. And I want to point to Michael Pollan's book. Would you say that this is, you know, as a, you know, as a trigger, but maybe at a high level, you could just talk to how quickly cultural acceptance is, and further to that, medical acceptance and, you know, the fact that some of these treatments, psychedelic treatments, are better than the status quo.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, one of the big differentiators here with psychedelic drugs as medicines is that this the force that is really swinging the pendulum back in the other direction on psychedelic drugs is science and data. So this is not a, unlike, say, you know, cannabis, which was really kind of enthusiast led. So to speak, you know, with psychedelic drugs, this is really being, you know, led by scientists, because it was scientists who knew all along that these drugs had, you know, real potential. And it was scientists who, you know, initiated the research behind these drugs in the 80s and 90s, and then, you know, up through now, to really, you know, create, you know, actual, you know, verifiable clinical data that to show that the drugs, you know, could really, you know, play a role. So if you sort of fast forward to today, you now have both, you know, MDMA in phase 3 clinical trials and psilocybin as well. MDMA is being studied to treat, you know, post-traumatic stress, which obviously is a huge problem, particularly in the United States. And you know, psilocybin for treatment resistant depression. And you know, you don't get to phase 3 unless, generally speaking, you know, you can show some efficacy with your drugs. And so the phase 2 data for both psilocybin and for MDMA and a whole series of other, what you call, you know, investigator initiated studies prior to that, have really laid the groundwork and really established that, you know, the drugs, you know, have kind of a role to play in the sort of the spectrum of different, you know, mental health treatments. And I think it's really the fact that, like, the science is leading here is what has really, you know, caused this kind of cultural shift. So yeah, you mentioned the Michael Pollan book, which then became the Netflix series. You know, I think that's been huge. We've all seen, you know, testimonials, celebrities kind of coming out of the woodwork, talking about their experiences with, you know, whether it's with ayahuasca or psilocybin or, you know, any one of a number of other drugs they've used in an unregulated context, you know, themselves, where they've attributed, you know, their, you know, an improvement, or whether it's in their mental health or outlook, you know, I think it's like the floodgates have opened. And I think people are now, you know, feeling like they have permission to talk about their experiences publicly, you know, with the drugs. But again, I think what's really kind of shifted the cultural discourse on psychedelics, if you will, is the fact that, you know, there's actual science and data that we can point to. I think that's absolutely, you know, key here.
That's a really interesting point that the, you know, it's the compare and contrast versus, cannabis, right? It's just that the idea here is that it's just this massive body of science, and really science is the driver, right? That makes things very interesting. That's a great point on the science being the driver here with respect to leading the change, and, you know, the compare and contrast relative to cannabis. And James, Mindset Pharma, that really has been your focus. Science has, you're a science-led company, you know, that's what you guys do. Could you, James, give an overview of how Mindset sees itself fitting within the psychedelic landscape and what your core strengths are as a company?
Yeah, absolutely. So Mindset Pharma is very much a science, you know, scientist founded, science-led, science-driven company. And really, you know, Mindset was started by some scientists who had pretty deep expertise and background in, you know, in getting what I would, call early stage, biopharma, biotech ventures, off the ground and developing them. And so they looked at psychedelic medicine really with the lens of, pharma in mind. And they had a really particular point of view from the beginning. And this is now a point of view that's, I could say, probably shared by quite a few other folks in the space. But when they got going, this was really a really novel insight. And that insight was that as great as the data was around psychedelic drugs, those drugs, those known drugs, really would be kind of viewed by pharma as a great proof of concept for what psychedelic drugs were capable of as medication, but that ultimately pharma would ultimately be, a significant player in this space, like they are in, every other field of medicine, and that they would really naturally gravitate towards new drugs that had been optimized to make up for some of the shortcomings in first generation psychedelic drugs, and that also were new. And by virtue of the fact that they're new and hadn't existed before, they'd enjoy much stronger intellectual property rights. And there's absolutely a very large, world of generic pharma companies. But what you think of as kind of big pharma doesn't want to start with generic drugs. They want drugs that are new and that are going to enjoy what you call, composition of matter, intellectual property rights, where you have a patent on the actual underlying, what you call the active pharmaceutical ingredient, the actual molecule that's going to last for, 25 years. And so the viewpoint with mindset was let's build for where the future of the space is headed, which is novel drugs, and let's really try to apply medicinal chemistry and really kind of the tools of the trade of biotech to these first generation drugs to see if we can improve them and we can create new drugs. And so I think, unlike literally just about every other company in the space, that was our focus at the beginning, and that's been our focus, ever since. And I think, so far, it's worked out, pretty well in mindset's favor.
Yeah, James, that really was, as you know, we were early as the industry the public markets were, were just getting started with respect to psychedelics. And the one big difference when we met and understanding mindset was that you guys were incredibly focused on the science side to a point where everyone else just looked like it was such a different take. And what since has transpired and where the industry has gone, it's clearly what you guys said from the onset: intellectual property IP would be the most important. And really,
that's right.
And really where we've seen that happen is really that's been the case. This, and coming back to a key point that you made here, is that the value isn't going to be in the drugs that we know, the natural drugs that we know. It's going to be in these, what you did, like, if we correct me if I'm wrong, but these are the drugs that basically you're adding, you're enhancing, right? And vis-a-vis the intellectual property, could you help me understand how that process happens, right? So like, I'm just going to throw out like psilocybin, or you feel free to pick another one where, okay, listen, it's been known to do these things, but it also has some drawbacks. How do you guys look at it and say, listen, how do you guys attack that?
Yeah, I think it's important to understand, this is no different than really, like, this is a process that's been going on for effectively, hundreds of years, right? So you take a natural substance, you try to understand how that natural substance works, and then you try to apply some chemistry and some trial and error to try to come up with a better drug. It's no different than the process that took us from the bark of the willow tree to aspirin, you know, or from, you know, even from, you know, from opium to, you know, stronger, better painkillers. It's really the same process. So in the case, but I think, you know, the difference here is like, we know that psilocybin works to a degree. We know that it can help people, but it has some, you know, some specific shortcomings. So the biggest shortcoming likely with psilocybin is its duration. So the peak experience is about 2 hours, but the after effects of psilocybin linger for about a total of kind of 6 to 8 hours. And that's, you know, you can't do this at your home. You're going to have to do this in a clinic. And that is really challenging for psychiatrists. That's a long time to have somebody in, you know, in your clinic. You need two therapists to supervise somebody the entire time. And it's a long time for a patient. It's essentially their whole day. So, you know, when we talk to psychiatrists today, really they view the issue of can psilocybin help people? They view that as pretty much, you know, settled by the data. But, you know, in their view, the duration is just too long. And so what they ask us essentially is, you know, can you try to create a drug that, you know, delivers the same experience and the same therapeutic benefit as psilocybin, but, you know, cuts that duration down. And then, you know, additionally, you know, while psychedelic drugs are generally speaking pretty safe and definitely non-addictive, you know, they do have some potential side effects. And when you're talking about, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, a young adult taking one of these drugs, you know, recreationally and you know, using them across you know, a large patient group of you know, people who've suffered from you know neuropsychiatric illnesses for their lives. So safety, we think, is a bigger concern. So those are the kinds of factors that we are trying to you know, adjust and control for, and we're trying to do that at really the molecular level. So this is really where the science and the art of medicinal chemistry comes in, where, you know, our scientific team is, you know, based on their experience designing, you know, drugs and working with drugs that interact with the serotonin system, you know, making, you know, small changes to, you know, to the psilocybin molecule to see, you know, if we can, you know, create, you know, some positive, you know, optimization, if we can improve, you know, reduce the duration and make safer drugs. And what's really exciting is that, you know, so far we've seen across a number of our new drug families in our portfolio, you know, those exact improvements. So, you know, we have families of drugs that are, you know, that show, you know, a similar psychedelic effect to psilocybin, but have, you know, a significantly shorter duration, and have some improved safety signals. And I think it's really because of the fact that, you know, we've had this focus from the beginning, filed our IP really early and achieved, you know, some of this differentiation early on, that, you know, Mindset's been the first company in the space to form a partnership with Big Pharma on new drugs. So it's been really exciting and validating.
James, thanks for helping us understand that aspect of you know, how that works. And you mentioned the Big Pharma important, you know, Big Pharma entering the space, and you guys are in a unique Mindset's in a very unique situation here with respect to your partnership with Otsuka Pharmaceuticals from Japan, one of the largest global pharmaceuticals. That is clearly a huge differentiator when we think about, at the broad level, how many big pharma companies have partnered with any of the other psychedelic companies. You guys are in a select few. I would say actually literally you can count it on your hand. How many companies have partnered with a company the size of Otsuka? Could you talk about that partnership and the importance and lastly the validation that brings to what you're doing, and secondarily a broader point, what it is, the importance to the validation for psychedelics? So A, the validation of psychedelics at a industry level, and then B, obviously a validation for what Mindset is doing.
Yeah, for sure. So I think what's really important to start with is you know, who is Otsuka? So this is really important to understand, which is that, you know, they truly are a global big pharma, and but in particularly in psychiatry. So they would be a top 10, I believe, you know, psychiatry drug company. Their drugs are used, you know, all over the world. They're, you know, truly, truly, you know, experts in this field, and they truly have the capability to bring, you know, drugs all the way to market. That takes me to the next point that I think is really important to understand, which is that it is almost unheard of for a company to take its drugs, from designing a new molecule, you know, all the way to market. It takes not only, I think everybody knows this, an incredible amount of capital, but it also takes an incredibly varied array of specialized skills. You need people who have, you know, expertise in doing early stage testing, and then people who have expertise in, you know, interacting with regulators and designing clinical trials. Like, this is why it's so expensive, it's an incredibly complex, you know, undertaking, really too complex for any one organization to do, you know, by themselves. So generally speaking, the way that drugs come to market now is you have companies that specialize in early stage discovery, and then eventually they partner with pharma companies. Those partnerships don't usually happen until typically, you know, after phase one. So this partnership with Mindset has happened, you know, a lot earlier than it does for, you know, for a typical biotech. It is a huge validation for Mindset. So really, this is the only partnership in the space focused with a big pharma focused on new drugs. And Otsuka is, you know, far and away the most knowledgeable drug company that we've interacted with on, or that we've seen on psychedelic drugs. They're financial investors in Compass, which is a company focused on first generation drugs, and they did, you know, a tremendous amount of diligence on the space and met with a lot of different companies in their selection of a partner for new drugs, and it was Mindset. So really, this is like the ultimate diligence, you know, by proxy, because they did a tremendous amount of diligence on Mindset and all our data and our programs and our IP. And it's a huge validation, and it also really just increases the likelihood that Mindset will, you know, be able to get a drug to market, because this is really what, you know, what Otsuka does and is really expert in. And they're running, you know, an enormous number of clinical trials around the world. We get to really rely on that expertise. So it's a huge, huge win for, you know, Mindset. And it also is been a tremendous amount of, you know, source of capital on really favorable terms. And, you know, Otsuka's funding the development of our programs. It's meant that we haven't had to go back to the capital markets to, you know, to dilute our shareholders or to, you know, raise new capital to advance drugs. You know, it's a great, you know, they're as good a partner as you could have, really, for our shareholders.
And that's a very interesting point here. The fact that, in a way, Mindset's business model is asset light, right? It, like, from a perspective, the IP focus and, you know, and having this partnership, it takes a significant load off in terms of your capital needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's you know, under the terms of the, under our collaboration, Otsuka funds the development expenses of the two families that we partnered with them on. And all that funding is, you know, non-dilutive. So it's really, you know, really favorable, you know, really favorable structure. You know, in return for all that funding, Otsuka has like a right of first refusal on those two families at the end of phase one. So it's really just opens up another window for, you know, potentially another negotiation if the programs go well, and everything's going really well. You know, to date, we've just, you know, announced the other day that we selected a lead from our family, from one of our families to, to take into what you call IND enabling studies, which is really the last step before, clinical trials. So, I think particularly in these market conditions, this is the, this is the perfect, perfect partner and structure for Mindset to be able to really continue to, advance the drugs.
And James, just as a final big picture question, with respect to the overall psychedelics industry, some would say that, the industry was premature, with the exception of a few companies that clearly Mindset is one of them, that, and the validation with Otsuka. Could you, how do you view the industry evolving? Obviously there's a plethora of other public companies out there. I just bigger picture, how do you see the next couple of years unfolding for the psychedelics industry? And maybe, how it separates the winners from the losers as well. And how should an investor think about it? And how do you see it evolving?
Yeah, I think, at a very high level, right, there's going to be a couple of components that are going to be, essential to the development of psychedelic medicine. One of them is the drugs, and then the other is everything that goes around the drugs. So they likely do require some level of specialization in terms of, clinical infrastructure. I think that on the drug side, my hope in general for, the space is that it moves in the direction of medicine in general, which is towards, greater precision and personalization. So I don't think that this is going to be I don't think that there'll be 50 drug companies, but I also don't think there's going to be one drug company, because I think there's probably an opportunity for, a range of different, new drugs. Obviously, I think Mindset has, the strongest position in the field, but, there will be others. I do think that the companies that are focused on, and this is important for investors to really do their homework on, and companies that are focused on old drugs, focused on formulations of psilocybin, even if they call it a new drug, if it's a formulation of psilocybin, that means that really it's an old drug. They're working with psilocybin. Those companies are going to have a harder time maintaining strong kind of competitive moats around their business. And so I think those companies are going to, the work that they're doing is important, but they're just going to have a harder time building, a really defensible, business around those moats. And then there's the clinic side. And I think, we'll have to see how that evolves, but, that's going to be an important, an important piece as well. So those are sort of the two buckets to look for.
James, that's a fantastic overview. And, I think we literally just scratched the surface in terms of understanding the broader, the broader implications and context of psychedelics. And obviously, we'd love to have you come back and dig deeper into this.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate it. James, thank you so much for joining us. And that's the Grizzle One-on-One series. James, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, guys.